that actually Carlos's dad had brought together in the central part of Cuba, and was able to travel there with Carlos. And we've just become friends after that, learned a lot from him about what's going on in Cuba. He and his wife, Yannette, had moved here in 2015, 14, and then you became the lead worship pastor at Prestonwood, their Spanish-speaking ministry in 2015. And he's got an interesting story about being a musician and just committing that to being to playing for the Lord. And so he's given up on playing secular music, and like convicts me because I sit in my office and play country songs. I think maybe I should play worship songs instead. So thanks a lot for that. He also taught me not to ever borrow a four iron from someone because that's the fastest way to put your ball into the drink. So thanks for teaching me that. But really, I want y'all to hear an encouraging message about a world that seems so far away, and yet it's only 90 miles away from Florida, and what God's doing there. What God has been doing in his life. So, put your hands together for Carlos Alamino Jr.
Well, thank you very much. Can we just move this? I feel like it's best like that. Let me make sure I put the clock. Well, thank you, Abiding Father. Thank you, guys. This is amazing. This ministry is making a change in my country. They are changing how a dad looks like. Like, I'm coming from a country where there's a lot of machismo and alcohol, and dads are beating the moms and doing all of that. And these people are teaching pastors, training people so they can help the community, because we do nothing if we are not helping the community. So we cannot be a big structure, a big church, if we are not invested in the community. And our ministry is mainly focused, how are we going to transform our communities for Christ? So we are going to help you at a personal level, but we are going to share the gospel with you as well, so we can change your soul, so you can have an eternal life. And it's interesting because this is a father's forum, and I'm recognizing a few faces that I should be taking classes from. So I shouldn't be here trying to talk about being a father. I'm 37, and you know, I honor so many faces here because I know their families. They have done a really good job. So I decided to talk today about Cowboys' victory last Monday. I'm definitely, you know, that's the best game I've ever seen the Cowboys play since I moved to Dallas in 2014. Right? It was a good game, right? So for me, it was very interesting because before the game, there was Stephen A. Do you know Stephen A? That guy at ESPN that everybody hates in Dallas. Like, he was talking trash about the Cowboys, and then Dak Prescott's dad and Elliott's dad was on the line trying to eat the guy alive. I don't know if you saw that interview, but you know, for me, it's, man, what can a father do for their kids? It doesn't matter who you are. If you give me the opportunity, I'm going to defend my kids at any cost. And that was so gratifying to see that. But you know, my son says, I wasn't born in the U.S. I was born in Texas. So I was born in Cuba. But, you know, I'm full Texas, so I'm Cowboys, Rangers, Mavericks, all of those, yes. Yeah, we definitely need to go for those guys. So, but today, I would love to talk about a race together. I'm a young father. I have an 8-year-old and a 1-year-old. And, you know, I know I have a lot to learn, but I have lived a life under the shadow of a man that is my personal hero. I have grown seeing my dad and my mom doing ministry in a way that I don't know if I will be able to experience that in my entire life. I was born in Cuba. My dad was a professional baseball player. God called him to leave baseball and start become a pastor. He went to the seminary. He studied there. So we moved to the country, to a very small town in Granma, very east of Cuba. And he started a ministry with only 10 people in the church. And 90% of the congregation was women. So there was no man there. And I was 3 years old when they moved to this location. And they started the ministry there, believing that God prepared the man to lead in the church and the community. So he used every tools he learned on sports and as a professional, how to impact men, how we are going to start bringing men to the church. Because when you're in a communist country, when you have a president that they don't like church, they are trying to kill the church. This is the only institution that Castro couldn't own when he took power back in 1959. So the church was a threat to him. He tried to put all the pastors in prison. He wanted to kill the movement of the church, right? And now you have this young pastor coming to this location, trying to make an impact for the community, and you are a pastor. Of course, there was oppression, a lot of persecution, and I grew up seeing all of that. So my dad started a ministry. One of the big things he did was planting small churches in houses, because in Cuba, you cannot build a church after 1959. You are not allowed by law to have a church after 1959. So he decided, okay, that's a great strategy. I believe that we're going to plant a church in a house. When we max out the house, we go to another location, we do another one. And so that was the life of the ministry. But I saw that my dad doing this ministry never put me away from the ministry. He made me and my sister part of the deal. So I appreciate that a lot, because many of the pastor kids that grew up with me, today they are far from the Lord, because many of those pastors and those leaders kept their kids away from the ministry. But my dad, literally, I remember being 5-6 years old on my bike, and he was putting a rope on my bike to pull me, to take me to the different missions and to help him with music or whatever, since I was 5-6 years old. So I grew up like that. So when I got to the point that I had to make a decision, you know, this has been my life. So being here for the Lord, being here for the gospel has been my biggest passion, because that's what I've learned. That was the model that I was following. So I'm so happy that my parents did that with me. But when I was 11 years old, I had a car accident. And in that car accident, my jugular and carotid artery, I don't know, Alfie is a doctor, he can fix my words here, was lacerated. So I lost all my blood. It took me 30 minutes for somebody to take me to the hospital. When I got there, I lost all my blood. I was at 2 hemoglobin, I believe that was the number they gave. I don't remember any of this. So once I was getting to the hospital, I already forgot everything. So we go there. The doctors try to stitch me up, because I have all the wounds were in my face. We were driving a Chrysler 55, and we hit a tractor, and the windshield was actually glass. So it cut all my face. All my wounds were in my face. So I lost all my blood, and doctors declared dead completely. So they called my dad and my mom to come to the hospital, basically to say goodbye. And when my dad saw me on that bed, hospital bed, he was just crying and praying. But he remembered that when I was 5 years old, my parents, they were praying to God and said, God, if my son is not going to serve you, I want for you to take him with you when he turns five, before he turns five. And I'm now 11 years old. And let me tell you, the relationship that I see my parents having with God is something that is amazing. I've seen my dad nights and nights on his knees praying on his bed. So when they said, God, if my kid is not going to serve you, I want you to take him with you before he turns five. Believe me, that was literally a covenant with the Lord, a pact. So this is God, I want this for real. And when he was praying over me and remember about this, the nurses said, hey, the kid is breathing. The kid is breathing. So they take me from the hospital and take me to a different hospital. And every day we were seeing miracle, because if you know some about medicine, after your organs had been shut down because the lack of blood, it, you know, I don't know if that is just a miracle after miracle, because you cannot just turn it on. So it was like, okay, your kid is breathing because he have the machine. Well, his lungs are not responding. And my mom and my dad said, hey, you do what you have to do, God will do the rest. So in this race together, in every stage of my life, I've seen my parents saying, you do what you have to do, and God will do the rest. So every day we were seeing that something new happened, a good news, a bad news. Now his liver, and it was a complication day after day. For 15 days, we were in this battle in the hospital, and God gave us the victory because, you know, I came out of that accident, you know, walking from the hospital. I didn't have any issues with my health, and we were able to see a miracle that was told in the entire island. So everybody knew about the story of Pastor Carlos' kid that had the car accident, that died and resurrected, and God did the miracle. Well, that story was told in so many evangelistic crusades. That story was told in so many churches just to let people see God's wonder, and that if he did it in the past, he was able to do it today, and he will do it tomorrow. So one interesting thing that happened to me was that everything that happened, I was 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. And that was a very difficult age for a teenager to be going through all of this and then being in the spotlight of everybody. So I remember we were playing at the Evangelistic Crusade. My dad was preaching, and he was saying, but I know about a kid, and he told my story, and people accepted Christ. Many people heard about Christ. Many people believe in God because they were able to see the evidence. But what happened to me? People were coming to me. They want to check on me. They want to fact check that it was a real story. They want to see my scars. They want to see my face. They want to see everything. Well, for a 13, 14 years old, that's not fun. So it got to the point that I told my dad, you know, we're in this race together, but it is prohibited for you to tell my story anymore. I don't care if people are not going to be saved, but, you know, I'm tired of this. Like, every single time you're telling my story, I understand, but, you know, I don't want people coming to me. So I asked my dad, you need to stop doing this. And my dad, you know, so wise. Okay, son, I'm now a teenager. I'm now 15, 16 years old, and I'm going to high school. I'm in this age where, you know, you want to impress the girls in your class, but you are, you know, like everybody's coming to you to see your scars, to see how you're looking and all of that. And that was bothering me. I came to America multiple times because I came and I saw different doctors to try to fix up my face a little bit. And we came and, you know, it was a really tough season for me. It was great for the gospel. People were seeing God, but for me, it was very, very tough. So I remember one night I was just, you know, kind of, God, like, what's going on? Like, I don't want this. I don't want to feel this way. And then that night I was like, what should I do? Because I feel bad. This is affecting me. And the Lord told me that night, you know, you are the evidence of the miracle. And who are you to take away the marks so that people cannot see what I have done in your life? It's kind of, you have been gone when I was 11. I'm almost 20 now. And you are the evidence of a miracle. So you are perfect the way you are. And then the beauty of this was seeing my parents running this race with me. What they did with me, they gave me the space to fight with the Lord. They were not there to judge me for my actions. They were there giving me the space so I could have that moment with the Lord. And, you know, and the Lord won. So that day I said, God, if my testimony is going to change life, if my testimony is going to help others believe in you, I'm down for it. It's not easy. It wasn't easy to tell this story about what happened to you and the way that happened to you. And I believe that during this time, in this race together, God was giving the peace to me, but also to my dad. And when I'm talking about a race together, the last 4 years in our lives have been, I would say, the most challenging times in the life of my family, but at the same time, the most rewarding times for the gospel. In 2018, my mom died fighting cancer. 1 month later, my aunt, that she was a second mother for us, died because she couldn't handle all of that, and she had an aneurysm, and she died a month after. The following year, we got COVID. Every now in 2020, how crazy it was. My dad had a stroke. Half of his body was paralyzed. It was tough. Beginning of this year, my sister, her husband, and her daughter get in a car accident, and my brother-in-law died. And, you know, all this time, all these last 4 years have been kind of a reminder about this race I'm talking about. Life today, like Paul said, is just a race. And we are running. Some people will finish strong, an early age. Some people is going to finish the race when they're in the 90s or 100. It doesn't matter. It's just a race. And the reality about this race is that once you start experiencing that, you are seeing in your family that your eyes are not focused on this world anymore. Because you know that your goal in life is, I want to finish my race strong so I can believe in God's promises when he said, I am preparing a place where you won't have more pain, no more crying. You are going to have our mansions in heaven. And when you go through all of this, and now you are seeing what God is promising in the Bible, you know, it gives you hope. Because everything that we go through is just the evidence, is just the opportunity for us to evidence to others what we have been preaching for a long time. So in many years, we have been going through difficult situations just with the goal of demo to others, to show others that what we are preaching is a reality. So every action that happened in our lives, we can turn that as a way, okay, God says that he will be with me in this race. Okay, I'm going through this, but God is with me, right? I know that my victory is secure because he said it in his word. So now I feel that I'm running this race, not worry about tomorrow, not worry about what is going to happen, because I'm living my day to day with the goal that we are going to get to that point where our life here is going to end. This world, the way we see it, is going to be gone. So, but we have to prepare for that time. So the impact that we are doing today in the life of the fathers, like Abiding Father is doing, in the life of the people in our community, is what is going to matter at the end of the time. When my mom died, I flew to Cuba the very next day. I went to her service, and we had a blast. We had a party because we saw how many people she was able to impact in this race together. So my encouragement today to you with this testimony is just to let you know that everything that we do as men, as dad, with our children, with our family, is walking with them day to day on this race together, trusting in the Lord, living the day by day, not being too concerned about tomorrow, because probably we won't have the tomorrow. Probably everything we have is the today. So when we are in this race together with the Lord, we know that our victory is secure because he already won on the cross. And today, I just want to give that encouragement to you. And I want to thank you guys for the opportunity that you are giving me to speak to you from a young dad. But I had an amazing father, amazing man that was guiding me through this process. And thank you, Bill.